Hey LA, Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels. Immerse yourself in our vibrant fashion scene where exclusive streetwear meets high-end boutiques. Stroll through styles defining our bold, wildly creative city, like the unique finds at Melrose Trading Post, a real LA gem. Explore star-studded experiences on Hollywood Boulevard, behind-the-scenes studio tours, and moments of awe under our legendary blue sky. Picture this. The iconic Griffith Observatory, inspiring directors worldwide. Plan your weekend at discoverla.com. It's the time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass, zatting off.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my new series, Parrish. My character, Gray Parrish, was a getaway driver.
I'm retired from life, you know that.
He's in a world over his head.
Tell me about this driver job.
And he's asked to start to figure things out.
I did what you told me to.
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new, Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC+.
This is Frosted Tips with Lance Bass,
an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hello, my little peanuts. It's me, your host, Lance Bass. This is Frosted Tips, everyone, with me and my husband, Michael Turchin.
Hello there.
Turkey Turchin to boast.
That's right.
Gobble, gobble. I hope everyone has recovered from their Labor Day weekend. Yeah. We sure have. We had a nice little relaxing weekend.
It was somewhat relaxing in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Celebrating some friends, getting engaged.
Yeah.
It was nice to get away because we didn't really have much of a summer vacation.
No, apart from our road trip.
We did that
trip.
Road trip, which was amazing. Awesome. We drove the 101.
We used to do that every year.
I agree. I can't wait for the kids to get old enough to
be
able
to
go traveling with us.
I can't wait.
I want to be a camping family.
I will be a glamping family.
We can be a glamping family.
I mean, I'll camp too.
But we have to pitch a tent every once in a while.
Oh, for sure.
One of those Mac Daddy family tents.
Oh, that's what I
do. Like two bedrooms somehow.
Yeah, you put air mattresses in there. Yeah.
It's got like a balcony with a jacuzzi.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They sell those at Home Depot.
But how fun will it be to have like, because we don't let the kids sleep in our bed because we don't want to start that habit because we have so many friends that are like, don't do it once
I know.
You start.
So many friends with kids now are like 3, 4 and they're still sleeping in their bed.
And it would be
night.
Hard for twins because one of them's going to be jumping around. It would be really hard. And I don't want them to be in that habit. Although
I just
desperately want
them.
To sleep next to them. Oh my God.
A little soon. Once they're not even 2 yet. So once they get bigger, a little more stable.
But I feel
stable.
Like this would be, like camping, you're forced to have to like snuggle with.
Okay, I'm down. Let's go camping.
Right? Yes. A little tent.
I mean, we can practice at first in our yard.
Oh yeah. We can just go, yeah. I used to do that as a kid. Well, not all the time. We did it maybe twice. As it always started out as a good idea. You're
but then
like,
you have to
friends.
Like pee in the middle of the night.
Yes.
And then you're like, well.
And then you just go to your bed.
Then you just
you're
go
like,
to your
you're
bed.
You're not going back. Yes. So yeah, your friends are like, you know what? We're going to camp out. So, you pitch the tent. Your friends are back there. Yeah. Yeah. 2 in the morning. You're like, I got to pee.
I'm thirsty.
And then you go straight to your bed.
Yeah.
You're like,
I would do that a lot as a kid. I would always pitch a tent on my parents' balcony on their bedroom. Yeah. Sleep there.
That's what, it always sounds like a good idea, but it just doesn't end up that way. Guys, today we have Mr. Rob Thomas on.
Yeah, we got a good one.
Oh my goodness. Yes, he's not an official boy band, but he was a boy in a band.
Yeah,
so it counts.
Of course.
It counts because, we're going to run out of boy band members, so we got to really start stretching out a little bit.
Yeah, but he's had such a great career.
Started at the same time as we did, 1995, Orlando, Florida.
Yeah.
I would say we're people really compared us.
It was hard to differentiate.
Matchbox 20 NSYNC. You know, it wasn't Backstreet NSYNC. It was always Matchbox NSYNC.
20 NSYNC. Yeah, it's like who's who.
Like we can't tell them apart.
No,
They were great dancers.
I know. For the longest time, I thought you were.
And we played great instruments.
I thought your name was Lance Bass because you were the bass player of Matchbox 20. Yeah, I thought
it's true.
I thought it was just a stage name.
Yeah, but we definitely went in different directions, and they did quite well.
Yeah,
quite
he's. Well. I was just reading. He's sold over 80 million records, including the ones he's written. So that's a lot. That's good.
Someone's got some good royalties coming his way.
No, we're going to ask him.
Unless he got screwed like everyone else did. Yeah. But I think he's good.
I mean, you've been
doing it this long, you're going to be making some good ASCAP deals there.
Yes.
All right. So when we come back, we're going to have the one and only.
I'm sure there's another Rod Thomas.
I think it's not this Rod Thomas. I don't know. It's a very rare name, I would think. Robert Kelly Thomas is going to be with us. Matchbox 20. And I think, you know, helped. I mean, in the late 90s, remember the Latin explosion happened?
Yes.
And then Smooth with Santana was right in the middle of that.
I mean, that song
this is what solidified like the Latin influence on the music industry.
And all it took was a German-born American singer named Robert Kelly Thomas.
Exactly. We'll be right back.
Hey LA, Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels. From epic shopping to nonstop pride events, discoverla.com is your gateway to everything LA. From walk-up windows and rooftop bars to year-round alfresco dining, Los Angeles is a culinary thrill ride sure to leave visitors hungry for more. From tacos to sushi, we truly have some of the best restaurants. After you get a bite to eat, get a taste for fame firsthand by attending a star ceremony on Hollywood Boulevard or glimpse behind the scenes at World Famous Studio Tour. Stop and see a movie at the iconic El Capitan Theater and check out the stairs outside the Dolby Theater where all the stars walk before the Oscars. Take a hike at glamorous Griffith or stop for a boba or a draft cold brew at an outdoor cafe perfect for people watching. There are endless amounts of outdoor activities in LA with our beautiful weather. And of course, Pride is celebrated every day in Los Angeles. Everyone is welcome to experience our sparkling nightlife, indulgent spas, and sensational shopping. Plan your weekend at discoverla.com. It's time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass, signing off.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Mr. Rob Thomas.
Guys.
How are you?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. It's been 500 years since I've seen you.
I know.
I love it. Everything good? Where are you calling from?
I'm in my studio here in New York.
All right. Nice. Have you lived in New York long?
Yeah, about 25 years.
So 25 years. Nice.
Yeah, when I met when I met my wife, we were like, we lived on the bus for like 3 years, yeah. You know, because it was the first record and kind of just going through all the first record stuff. And so when I got off the road, I didn't live anywhere and we were together and she was from New York. So we moved into the city and we were there, and then we moved up to Westchester a while back.
Nice. I love it. That's when my husband here, Michael, by the way, Rob.
Hello. Hello.
When we met, I was moving from LA to New York.
Yeah.
So a month after we met, I'm like, well, this isn't going to last. But then somehow it did. I think long distance really made
it did.
The heart fonder, as they say. All right. Well, let's get started, shall we? I mean, I could talk to you for hours, but we only have 1 hour with you. All right. Robert Kelly Thomas, American singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, best known for being the lead singer of rock band Matchbox 20. Thomas also records and performs as a solo artist with Lonely No More, released in 2005. He had even more chart success. Now, he has received 3 Grammy Awards for co-writing and singing on the 1999 hit Smooth by Santana, which was also his first song as a featured solo artist. And he's also been a songwriter for artists such as Willie Nelson, Mick Jagger, Mark Anthony, Pat Green, Taylor Hicks, Travis Tritt, Daughtry. That's some good names right there. Rob Thomas, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. That's, you know what? We can leave it right there. Good night.
Right? That's a good
intro. I was going to ask, is all that true?
Yeah, I mean, all of it. I think that we're smudging multi-instrumentalists.
Yeah. Well, what's your favorite instrument to write on?
You know, I love writing on the guitar, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm a limited skilled guitar player.
Yeah.
So eventually I wind up having to move over to the piano because like I'll hit a chord that I don't know.
Right.
And I know where I want it to go. And I know that I can find it on the piano because I'm a much better piano player.
Oh, nice. Nice. Well, let's start at the beginning.
Yeah.
Now, I know you were born in Germany because your dad was in the army. Where in Germany were you born?
So in Landstuhl on the Ramstein Air Base. You know, we heard a lot about that during pretty much any war, because that's where they take all of the soldiers when they're anywhere from anywhere in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's actually an Air Force base, but it's shared by the Army.
Oh, nice. Yeah, we, because NSYNC, we started at Orlando, obviously, first, but then we moved to Germany, and you did the opposite. We went Germany to Orlando. So what brought y'all to Orlando?
It's funny, Lou Pearlman. It was so weird.
Wait, no, he did not. Trust me, I would know if he put his
fingers on
y'all.
This is the first time you've ever heard this.
I think, you know, like nobody's really from Orlando, right? Like everybody winds up there somehow.
Yeah.
For me, it was like middle school. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom got a job in banking software at a company in Orlando. And so we just happened to move there. So we just kind of happened to be there. And that's where the band started, but only because that's where I was, you know, when I graduated high school.
Yeah. Was it hard for you to move to a different country at such a young age?
No. So actually, I mean, I was like, friggin' two. Like I left as a baby, and then that was
So you don't really remember too much of that.
Yeah, exactly. So I went straight from there to Fort Jackson Army Base in South Carolina, mm-hmm. where my mom and dad lived. And then my mom and dad got divorced when I was like two.
Okay.
And so I was like in South Carolina for a long time, and then over to Florida.
Yeah. And I mean, I've read where your childhood and teenage years were pretty difficult. You know, like so many artists that we know, you dealt with homelessness to abuse. And it's amazing to see where you are now with the rough start that you had. Where did you find the drive to actually pursue music through all that?
I mean, I think, you know, there's always that point, I think, when you're going through stuff like that, and that at that young age too, where you're kind of on the precipice of things going really, really good or really, really bad. And so like I was kind of falling down the wrong path, and I met musicians, you know, at a really young age. Like I think I was a freshman in high school, they were seniors. But it spoke to me in a way. Like my first band, I remember my first band, I think we were called Bondage. we played like a pool party at a friend's house in Florida. And I remember our first song was I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight. Like that was the first song we played. And I was hooked, man. I was just like, oh, this is great. And it kind of, it just spoke to me in a way that nothing else had. And then I didn't really have any other skills. And so I didn't really have a lot of backup plans. So even when I started to kind of work in bands and take it seriously and, you know, and gig out on weekends and stuff, I just started to make it where I would take any job that would never become a career.
Yeah.
So I learned how to do everything in construction and everything in restaurants and everything, you know, delivering and making futons and like anything that I could quit on a Friday if I had to, and then get a new job on a Monday.
That's great. I've always wondered when you're with your first band, Bondage. Which, by the way, did you name the group Bondage?
I'm sure I did. But it's so awesome. That had to be me.
What music were y'all doing at that point? Was it still rock?
I mean, yeah, it was like alt rock. This guy named Kay Zalatracci was the keyboard player, and he was kind of like the music Svengali of everything. He was the guy that kind of pulled everything together. He knew what he wanted to do. He was getting ready to go to Berklee College of Music the next year. And he came like straight from Italy. Like, his family are straight from Italy. They barely spoke English. And so, like, he had this kind of cool European style. It was all Cavaricci's before we knew what Cavaricci's were. Nice. He was all like, but he brought over like Depeche Mode and all these other bands and all these alt bands, you know, and kind of turned me to The Cure and you know, all of these different things. And so he was kind of the driving force behind it. I wasn't even writing yet. I was just singing these songs that he was writing.
Right. Now, you, Tap of the Secret was another band that you were in right before Matchbox 20. When did Tap of the Secret start?
So I think that was probably like 92. Mm-hmm. Like, that was when I was starting to write songs, and I wanted a band to play these songs that I was writing. And that had me, Paul, and Brian, all from Matchbox 20, were in that with two other guitar players. So that was kind of like the beginning of everything.
Yeah.
And then that band, it's really interesting because, you know, they tell you you have your whole life to write your first record. And then the sophomore record is kind of the hard record.
Yep. Yeah. We've said that several times on the show. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I lucked out in one way because we had a huge litigious falling out with the guitar players in this band. And one of the things that had happened, you know, I was kind of naive in a lot of ways, like we all are at that age. And I had written about a bunch of songs, and these guys kind of walked in the room with these copyright papers and were like, here, just sign these. And we all signed them. And I didn't realize I was signing away all these songs that I had written into the band. And so when things got really, really bad and really contentious at the end, I except for 3 a.m. 3 a.m. was a song that I always felt close to because it meant a lot to me. It was like one of the first songs that I wrote that I really felt people should listen to. Mm-hmm. I abandoned everything else, every other song that we had worked on, and I wrote that first Matchbox record in like a 6-month period. Like, I put it all together and I just didn't want the satisfaction of them, you know, me making a record. And then the best thing that happened, because listening back to those original group of songs, they were dog shit. Yeah. And I mean, like, I wouldn't be sitting here having a talk with you 27 years later if it's like my first, you know, entry into the world.
Yeah. No, I feel the same way. Like, with the NSYNC guys, we did not get signed to America early because no one wanted to sign us. And I'm so glad they didn't, because if they listened to our first stuff, there's no way people would have accepted us. We would have been dead in the water.
I know. It's so funny. Like, there's a certain time where you are better, like, you are showing promise at a certain age, but you're still kind of following.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
And we had a chance, and I say you and I, back coming from what I call the last good time, right, of being able to kind of build that up privately, like a mask, get yourself better, figure it out. And then you controlled the point of entry to where people saw you and how they saw you and how you brought that information out. Like, you know, we could still do that at least until like 2000. Yeah. You know, we still kind of, you could kind of control the way that you wanted to be.
I mean, it was really hard work. You know, it took forever to, you know, get a single out, go to every radio station in the country and, you know, travel and get everyone to pay attention to you. But you're right. I loved the fact that we were able to start small locally, get the radio station in Orlando to like us, then see if anyone else outside that. These days, a kid can put a song on TikTok and it blows up overnight, but then they're like, wait, I don't even know who I am. I don't know what my sound is, what's coming next.
So that can be. And they're not, I mean, a lot of those kids, it's hard for them to find, you know, a live audience. It's hard for them to kind of embed themselves in that way that we were allowed to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so funny, like, how there's so much, like, if I was young now and looking at the world, I would be amazed at the access that I had to my artists and the freedom that I had to choose my entertainment and how I wanted to listen to it and what I wanted to hear, and listening to bands that I never would have gotten to hear if it was only like these three places where you could find music. But at the same time, there's so much happening at one time that it's so hard. If you're young and you have a machine behind you, it's hard because the entire world is watching you from the jump. The minute that any mistake you make, that brands you with who you are. And if you're, you know, like a young kind of independent band, you have all these opportunities now that you wouldn't have had before. but it doesn't, there's nothing there to kind of bolster you up so that you get to the next record and the next record.
Yeah.
And that kind of progression, the way it's supposed to happen.
Yeah. Well, like you said, I mean, I think we were part of the last great generation of music before it just kind of got the business got weird, which every business does. But, you know, our business really went through a change in the late 90s, early 2000s with how we listen to music, how people get signed. You know, back then labels actually developed artists, but now they're just PR firms. What's the major thing that you've noticed in the last, 25 years of what has changed just for you personally in the music industry?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things is how exponentially quick it starts to change, right? In the sense, I remember when we first came out having a conversation whether or not we thought we needed a website, right?
Yeah.
Let's just wait and see.
Like, is this going to take off? I don't know.
Totally. I mean, having these conversations, because when we started out, it was like your press kit for labels was you had a folder and it had a cassette inside of it and some flyers from gigs that you've done and maybe a couple bumper stickers, for swag. And then that, and you give that to labels, and that's what they were used to getting. And it took a decade for that to kind of change into oh, we're going to do things online. But then it took three or four years to oh no, we're only going to purchase music online. Then it took only 3 years. So it was we're not going to purchase music at all. Mm-hmm. We're just going to listen to it online. Now, I'm having conversations with my label about the fact that they're disappointed because our record, the last Matchbox record, sold really, really well physically, but it's not streaming well.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. I think it was 5 years ago where they were just like, everybody's listening online, but we got to get those numbers up. Like there was a complete change within a 4 or 5 year period where now I went into the same president of our label and she's really just thinking about algorithms. This is the algorithm.
Yeah.
This is what's going to search better. This is what, and it's not, I try to not be the old guy back in my day.
Yeah.
But so fast it gets harder to wrap your head around, And so my son's 25 years old. He has a band right now called The Lucky. He graduated from Berklee College of Music.
Nice.
And he is way more equipped for this new world than I am.
Yeah.
He understands what he's doing with TikTok and he understands why that matters.
Right.
And
I think it's a good balance. It's taking the new and paying attention to what is happening, algorithms, that type of stuff, but also bringing just that old school look at music and what really works. Because yes, numbers are numbers, but you can't quantify feelings, And I think a lot of the times people, it is right now as a songwriter, I think, look how songwriting has changed the last 20 years. Back in our day, one or two songwriters, great. Now there's 20 writers to one major song. One person do half of the B verse, this will do the last, it's like Frankenstein,
it's Frankenstein
together.
For sure.
Do you think that is fair once first off? And as a songwriter, are you taken care of these days with numbers and all that? What we're doing with the SAG strike, all the actors are trying to get a piece of what they deserve. So are writers. Has music caught up to that?
No. I mean, yeah. I think I'm sure you've been a part of this. When you go every year with ASCAP or BMI and you do the March on Congress to try and, talk about the exact same, term limits that every artist has had since the beginning of the music industry, since the 60s. Yeah. Whereas every other entertainment industry has kind of changed what their contracts are. They turn into 7 year terms. We don't have any of those things.
Yeah.
And then all of this was happening while streaming became the number one way of listening to music. And there was not one consideration for artists. I remember when labels hated working with Spotify, and now they love it because they get a really good chunk of everything on Spotify, but nothing's been worked out for the artist.
Right.
And so if you're a performing writer, you're a little bit better off because you have those performing royalties. But in truth, I remember sitting with the guys from ASCAP and going through Smooth was a good example because it was one of the most streamed songs of the decade or whatever. And even with those numbers, if you were the other writer that wasn't the performer and all you had was your writing credit, I think it made $16,000 from streaming.
Wow.
It was nothing. We're it would have been in millions and millions. He should be able to pay his kids college.
Right.
Exactly.
But now because no considerations for streaming, as a writer and purely a writer, those guys, it makes it where I can't understand the incentive now to want to be a writer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's especially if you're like Benny Blanco or somebody, if you're going to write with their track, you're going to automatically get 50% of that track. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the only way that you're going to do it, because as a writer, he realizes he's going to bring a lot to the table, but he's not going to get a lot out of it.
Right. I know it's funny how, you know, I'm in the film and television and I'm in music, and just comparing the two, there's a lot of similarities, but I do think music is always behind.
I mean, we are like in some ways, and I say this, I think more as an ambassador to everyone who's coming up and the people who haven't maybe had as many lucky breaks as I've had, mm-hmm. because I've done well. I'm here in this really nice house in Westchester, so I'm not complaining, but on the overall picture, take me out of it. It's always been like my wife says that there's, you know, there's a certain gravitas for all the entertainment industry. And then music, even though it's the driver of so much, is like the bastard son of the entertainment industry.
It's so true.
Always kind of left behind and gets the scraps.
And try being in a boy band in the music industry where you're like the pariah of the music industry. It's like,
can you imagine like right now the movies start to, you know, show just a small crack in the facade, mm-hmm. and everybody starts to come to arms. Like, we must protect the movies. We must protect the movies. Mm-hmm. And then like a while back, someone said, you know, I just don't understand why we need to pay for music at all. And everybody was like, yeah, you know, I get that. That's totally true. I think it should be free. I think the whole world should have it. And you're like, yeah, but you know, what about
the person that made it,
like the creators,
you know, mortgages and things like that.
I mean, I love art too. Maybe we should just have free art, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Give all your art away for free, Mike.
Yeah, let's go to Sotheby's. Let's have a free for all.
Hey, LA, Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels.
From epic shopping to nonstop pride events, discoverla.com is your gateway to everything LA. From walk-up windows and rooftop bars to year-round alfresco dining, Los Angeles is a culinary thrill ride sure to leave visitors hungry for more. From tacos to sushi, we truly have some of the best restaurants. After you get a bite to eat, get a taste for fame firsthand by attending a star ceremony on Hollywood Boulevard or glimpse behind the scenes at World Famous Studio Tour. Stop and see a movie at the iconic El Capitan Theater and check out the stairs outside the Dolby Theater where all the stars walk before the Oscars. Take a hike at glamorous Griffith or stop for a boba or a draft cold brew at an outdoor cafe perfect for people watching. There are endless amounts of outdoor activities in LA with our beautiful weather. And of course, Pride is celebrated every day in Los Angeles. Everyone is welcome to experience our sparkling nightlife, indulgent spas, and sensational shopping. Plan your weekend at discoverla.com. It's time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass, signing off.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melanin Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
Okay, so in 96, you released your debut album, Yourself or Someone Like You, on the same day that the record label folded. Yeah. It only sold a few hundred copies. So what did you guys feel like at that moment? Yeah. Where did you think your career was going to go when you're folded?
I mean, what are the odds? Your album coming out and then folding this. Wow.
And everybody was getting dropped. It was online because I think it was like bands like Stiv. I think Sugar Ray, Kid Rock, and Edwin McCain, like the four that they that stuck around, and everybody else got dropped, and we kind of folded into Atlantic. One hand, we kind of thought our career was over, obviously. Because also we had a song out called Long Day, and it was underperforming, so that didn't help the situation. And we, there was another part of us though that was like, we had sold 612 records, and we thought, wow, we never sold 600 records in a week. That's amazing.
I know, if you sell those many CDs at a concert, you're like,
I know, exactly. That's amazing. That takes like a month work of shows. And then, I mean, we were sweating it out, and we were still out playing. You know, we had been since way before the release, you know, in the van and trailer, playing every shitty little club. It was funny because you think that the deal is to get the record deal, like that's your main goal, this aspiration that you have, and then you realize that you just have to now do the exact same work but harder and over, like the entire
starting all the way over.
But you don't really have any money because all that money you got from the advance goes back into the product, right? So like that went back into a van and trailer, and that went back into paying salaries and gear, and all the stuff that it took. So like we didn't really have money, even though we had this advance. We're traveling around playing to nobody. And so I literally, so for us, there was a station in Birmingham, Alabama, and a program director named Dave Rossi. So back in it, you have to imagine that it's a time where radio stations could play songs because they like them, right? There was no computer kind of telling you what the playlist has to be. There's no unified front. It was just a dude who was like, oh, I like this song, Push. And he just started playing it a lot in Birmingham. And it became like the number one song in Birmingham. And we're playing all to all these empty places, and we get to the Five Points Music Hall, and there's a line around the block. And that was like, it was like a film in that way. And that from that moment on, every week, exponentially just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And we're starting to like see these numbers. And then you're like, people are having these conversations about you when you're not in the room. You know, and that felt good. And so then we, from that point on, it was a pretty good steady success, but it was it was touch and go at the beginning there.
And like we were saying before, that's what I call the wave, right? You know, one town, a song will start blowing up, and then the wave starts, and it starts growing and growing, and you just follow that wave, you ride it. So by the time you get, you know, if it starts on the East Coast and you get to the West Coast, you've ridden it for like 6 months, like finally, you know, you can see the height of the song go up and down all the way across the country. It's a fun thing to see, but I don't know if that happens these days.
It's like almost 30 years later, the one thing that stayed consistent is the place where we seem to do the least is our hometown.
Always.
Like we don't even go to Orlando anymore. Because we don't sell enough, like to, you know, we can go to Tampa and sell 26,000 seats, you know, at the amphitheater. But sell 9,000 in Orlando.
What is that? Because same thing, I mean, with every band that I've talked to, the same thing. In Orlando, that was the least visited concert ever, was always Orlando. We would do Tampa, Fort Lauderdale. We know we'd do Orlando every once in a while, but like it, no one really cared. And maybe just because they know you so well. But I also feel that way in LA too. LA is always the worst show too, because everyone's a little too industry and, you know, they're just too cool.
LA's always been pretty good, especially considering that we're, you know, a 90s band. And also it got better like with the nostalgia. You know what I mean? Like, there's definitely a sense of like, you know, people, because now it's a lot of those people that came, because those people that were our age, my age anyway, they're like in their 70s now, and their kids are coming and their grandkids are coming. And so there's like this kind of a different kind of a resurgence. That's
yeah.
That,
oh yeah.
Well, like now on the last run.
And it and it's so great.
Not in Orlando.
Yeah, not,
yeah,
no,
not
no,
in
no,
Orlando.
No. But it's fun to see this resurgence because one, I constantly feel like I'm just 21 years old at all times, and I can't believe it's not 1999 anymore.
Right.
But the resurgence, especially of Push right now. I mean, Ryan Gosling has, you know, has covered your song, and I thought did a. To me, this the performance from Ryan was, you know how like impersonators impersonate Cher. I think this was his version of like really trying to impersonate you in like the most exaggerated
everybody
possibility.
Who impersonates me?
It's so
impersonates Cher.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
a, that's what we said. We're like, this is
Snap had a baby. Like everybody, yes. and I understand too because like especially like that first record, I was deep Southern accent.
Yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of like, you know, that going on.
Wait, was that Cher?
Cher, is that you?
Oh my God. And,
it's funny, everybody does that. Like it was so earnest. You know what I mean? Just kind of like
yeah.
And I mean honestly, I don't know like if I have a bigger crush on the male or female lead in mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
And just to see that face sing my words come out of that mouth, I was like, yes.
Yes.
I love it. So would y'all good. Ever officially record a duet of this?
That would be amazing.
I would do anything he asked me to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
He told me that I'm still awaiting that he asked for my home address because he wants to send a present to my house.
Oh well.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Well, we need to get this present.
Maybe it's because you know he sent Greta Gerwig for her birthday a flash mob to her exercise class.
What?
So maybe it might be a flash mob. Just be watching out for that.
That'd be amazing.
I think a lot of people forget that he has a great singing voice. I mean, he was on the Mickey Mouse Club. So, I mean, people forget that he was a singer first before mm-hmm. going into
acting. That's true. That's right. He was like right there with Justin and everybody.
Yeah.
Right
there.
Oh, yeah.
That's yeah, cool. Justin right. and JC oh and Brittany.
The fact that Disney does not bring back the Mickey freaking Mouse? Mickey Mouse yes. Club, because they used to bring it back every 20 years, right? Well, it's been right. way past 20 years. The talent that came from there, why would you not bank on just redoing that show to create the next super
you know
group
what,
of talented
like,
people.
It's true because like you know if you arguably like, if you think about all of the years at American Idol, there's only been a handful of people that have
yes.
really
yeah.
that barrier. Mm-hmm. The Voice with the most famous judges of all time, I don't know they've ever really broken
no mm-hmm. and the best artists. Talent but yeah they don't break any artists yeah.
I'm sure you get this guys because if you ever spend any time in Australia and you know about any of these Australian actors, every one of them was either on a show called Neighbors
yes.
or a show called Home and Away.
Yes.
And two of the worst fucking soap operas you're ever going to see in your life.
They're horrible.
It's an hour of like two people sitting in a room having a cigarette. Like, but if you name a famous Australian actor or actress, they came out of that right there. Like that's yeah. that's what the Mickey Mouse Club could continue to be.
100%.
It's true.
Like Kylie Minogue started
yeah,
in Neighbors.
Exactly. Or like the EastEnders in England. Like I feel like
oh,
everyone
EastEnders
was on
in England. Yeah.
As a looking back as you know a teenager, would you have ever auditioned for a show like Mickey Mouse Club? Would that have been your cup of tea?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, because I was never. For me, it was all about writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I overcame my fear of like being in front of people so that I could sing the songs that I wrote. Mm. And I always kind of felt like now if I couldn't find a career at this, I will just go away quietly. You know, like I'm not going to wind up on Dancing with the Stars and I'm not going to wind
yeah.
up, you know, somewhere else trying to keep it out in the spotlight because I only want to be known for the thing that I do.
Yeah.
You know? And I was also driven by like that need. I didn't know where I was going to go. I didn't have any other options. Like I was just driven by this need. And then the songs, like they kind of like, it was a snake eating its own tail. It was the need created the songs and then the songs created the opportunity. And then, you know, it just became so much about that, that like, I never had enough self-worth yeah. to be like, oh, I'm going to try out for something and get it.
Yeah. What made you feel that you had, that you were worthy? Was there a moment you're like, okay, I'm good at this?
No, I mean, I'm still working with my therapist on that.
Yeah, yeah.
We all are.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's a hard, like, worthy is a really hard thing because you're, I think if I equate the amount of work that I've done, you know, I think that if you, you know, I've worked really, really hard. And so there's a certain amount of deservedness that you have because you put the hours in. Mm-hmm. I think that I'm a good songwriter. I'm plagued constantly by great songwriters, you know, by like waking up one day and just hearing something that I'm just like, it looks like math again, even though it's just a verse and a chorus, but for some reason it's like some sort of weird math that I can't get my head around. It's just so beautiful. Like when Lord came out with Royals.
Oh, that was,
I mean, you could break it down to its parts and you know exactly what it is. It sounded like an alien just coming out of the, you know, because it was so perfect about it. I mean, maybe that's the idea too, is just never, it should always be a false horizon that you never quite get to, because then you're always kind of trying to chase it.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. Well, do you remember the first song you ever wrote?
Yeah, it was, well, I think it was a song called How Long Can a Dream Last? And I think it was actually, do you remember when the rock star guy, Jamie something, came on to Melrose Place?
Yes. Yeah, I do actually. Which is weird because I was more of a 90210 guy, but I do remember this. Yes.
Melrose was, I thought was like, you know, as we were getting older and we just started to maybe outgrow, because I'm a little older than you, but like as we started to outgrow 90210, Melrose Place was like, oh, we're here for you. Come on over.
Yeah.
It was like the graduating.
Like, yeah, hit. A single called How Do You Talk to an Angel? Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, because when we all started, that was the song that was out. Because I remember when we lived in Germany, Jamie would, you know, do all the radio shows with us and all that. And we always thought he looked, I think he was a little like Chris Kirkpatrick a little bit at the time, was it?
A little bit.
Yeah.
So basically, it was that song. Because it took me forever. Like, all the songs I wrote were just bad versions of Lionel Richie songs, right? Yeah. Like I was trying to like write love songs to pick up girls because I was a weird kid and I didn't really fit in. Like I got along pretty much with a lot of groups, but I didn't fit in with them. So I would like go to these, you know, like house parties in high school when like somebody's parents would go out of town and just, we would, you know, just ascend onto the house. And I would have like, if they had a piano in the house, I had a copy of the Lionel Richie Greatest Hits songbook on me. And so that, like, I would say like all the jocks would like drink and pass out and they would leave me with all their girlfriends. And I would just play in like Lionel Richie songs, you know, just trying to, you know, do my thing.
That's
years later, I ran into Lionel Richie at a hotel and it came over to him. And I was like, man, listen, you know, I just want to say hi. And he was really nice and generous. And I said, you know, I got to tell you, your songs have gotten me so laid. And he goes, me too.
I mean, imagine that how much sex Lionel has created in this world, because it is a lot. There's a lot of babies out there because of you, Lionel. And you forget how incredible Lionel is. We just saw him at the iHeart Festival last year or 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, love Lionel, right? But when I saw him, I was sucked back in. I'm like, oh my God, yes, this is why you're a legend.
I mean, so many songs.
Unbelievable.
What other legends do you love? Like what inspired you?
Well, I mean, you know, when I was growing up, I was in South Carolina in the deep South. So it was like Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings and Conway Twitty and like all these kind of like country storytellers. Yeah. Right. There was something about like these guys, they lived these really hard lives. You know, they were drinking and fighting and fucking and doing drugs. And, but then they wrote these beautiful songs about it. Yeah. You know, it's just a weird, you know, dichotomy of these two worlds. And then when I moved to Florida and I was in like middle school, high school, it was that second English invasion. So it was all of these alt bands that were coming over from, you know, from London, and we were all Anglophiles for a second. And like, and then it was all about that for a while.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I went through the punk phase. It was all like Black Flag and Dead Kennedys. So it was kind of like these different, you know, phases of my life, but the consistency, no matter what I was listening to, were like Lionel Richie, Elton John, Billy Joel, Tom Petty. I was always one. And I mean, Willie stayed there as well. The Stones, you know, that kind of thing. It was all, it still just stayed centered around songwriters for me.
Yeah. I was just thinking, you're definitely in this picture. Remember the Grammy picture we took with, I think, Dave LaChapelle,
Oh yeah, we have.
It was the big, like, it was MTV TRL put all their Grammy nominated artists together in one picture. It was the only time they did it because it was impossible to get all us together. But yeah, you guys were there, I believe. I think everyone was.
I was in there.
Yeah,
yeah. No, there was Matchbox during that time because that was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was 2000, I believe.
There was Diddy and J Lo and Britney.
The four Lenny Destiny's Kravitz. Child girls before Destiny went to three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah, it was a.
It was a fun day, but I need to put that picture up.
It used to be in your office.
Oh well, I don't have an office anymore. But yeah, that was a fun day. Do you remember the moment you found out you were Grammy nominated for the first time?
Yeah, I remember my manager calling me and saying, I mean, you know, like everybody knew that Supernatural was going to be a big nominated.
I mean, you're kind of the reason the Latin, you know, music exploded in the late 90s.
Well, I think we were like a second wave, right, of an explosion. Because it was post Ricky Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little after.
Right, yeah, yeah. Ricky
had came out. That started right there.
Yeah. At the Grammys. Yeah, we're like, who is this guy?
Yeah. I remember that. That'd be an amazing.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, there was a lot of really good songs that year. So when it came to songs, it was kind of, you know, and again, like you just never really kind of put yourself in that thing. I mean, you guys have been there before, but I'm sure that when it first started to happen, you're like, well, it's not going to be us.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like you really did think, well, it's a pleasure to be nominated. You know, you're like, well, it's just nice to be in the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still saying that after 9 nominations. I'm just saying.
Icebox has never won anything either. it felt really good. And what's funny is, you know, me and Carlos, then we were pretty tight.
Mm-hmm. But so did y'all know each other before Smooth, or did Smooth put y'all together?
But during that whole year, you know, recording and doing all the promo, and we did all this, you know, filming together. So we had spent a lot of time together.
Yeah.
But now it's funny. Like he texted me 5 minutes ago. And he just sends me like songs that he's listening to, or new stuff that he's working on, or like pictures of him from the road. You know, we're just two old men. You know, each other. Our wives are making fun of us because we're like up on the road. What are you up to? And he's like, I just fucking burned Chicago to the ground.
I love that.
That's awesome.
Would we ever see you guys doing a tour together in the future?
We talk about it all the time.
Yeah. That'd be so
cool. I mean, our problem that we have is that neither one of us wants to play first.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can do the whole Jay-Z Beyonce thing. They did it.
Yeah, well, I also said that I'll play first because it's Carlos. Like I'll come out and play first. But then Carlos is like, yeah, but I need my 2 hours, and I'm like, yeah, but I need my 2 hours. Like we can't do a 4-hour show. So we're thinking that maybe one offs, but the next move is to maybe do a record together.
Oh, yeah.
We never really did was take a record, like write a whole new record of all originals and then put it out. You know, but not just like 12 smooths, but you know. Try and see what it sounds like. Yeah. So we talk about
that
a lot.
That would be so incredible. And the timing is perfect. I mean, now is the moment. You know, it's like everyone is just really wanting to feel good again, you know, and go back just a few years where it was felt safe. And you make people feel safe.
I'm like a fucking hug.
Yeah, you are a hug. You are a great hug.
Nice hug.
So this also gave Matchbox 20 some more visibility ahead of the second album. And you also changed the name to Matchbox 20, spelling out 20. Why'd you do that?
I mean, it was more of a joke. Yeah. Like, I mean, we started liking it spelled out. It looked classier to us, you know?
Yeah.
And we joked that we were like tired of being compared to bands like Blink 182. Or like
I was about to say that,
you know, but then people didn't get the joke. I remember like opening up Entertainment Weekly or something, and there was like we were the dick of the week or whatever they call it, you know. And they're like, and the guy was just like, how dare they think they would ever be compared, you know? And I was just like, that was the joke. We changed our name from Matchbox 20 to Matchbox 20. Like that was the joke.
I love that. That is so great. Well, in 2004, Songwriters Hall of Fame awarded you with the first Hal David Starlight Award. Hal David, for those that don't know, is a prolific songwriter. I mean, name some songs.
I mean, he did so much like Dionne Warwick and I mean, everything. Walk On By.
I mean, pretty much everything that.
I mean, for decades he wrote songs.
He was the Bernie Taupin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Burt Bacharach.
You know, the way that Bert was to Elton, he was that for Bert.
Yeah. Exactly. When you knew you were going to get this this award, what went through your head? Because I mean, you are a songwriter first, and I can imagine, you know, the Hall of Fame, Songwriting Hall of Fame, you know, honoring you with this huge award. I mean, you must have gone back to when you were a 12-year-old and be like, "Oh my God, I did it!"
It was the best thing since Matchbox 20 won their first Jammy.
Yeah. Wait, what's a jammy? Do I know a jammy?
It was like Orlando magazine. In Orlando, the rag was Jam magazine.
Okay.
And so, like, and every year they'd have the Jammies, which is like the local band. It was like a big deal, dude. They held it at the Tupperware Center. It was you know, pretty fucking.
That's legit. That is legit.
Dressed up for that.
Yeah. We were never nominated for a Jammy.
No Jammies.
Yeah, you guys vote on the Jammies.
We did.
That was obviously, that was very cool because I was in a room full of people that, you know, songwriters are a funny breed because some of them we all know, and then some of the most famous ones you wouldn't recognize on the street, but we would, you know. So like you're there with like Mickey Newberry and all these people, and you're just like, wow, this is, you know, these are my people. So that felt pretty good.
Looking back at your career thus far, is there a moment that just really sticks in your head? You're like, that is my favorite moment.
There was something beautiful about the very, very beginning, you know, the van and trailer time, like right at that Sally Fields, they like me, they really like me, but the cheesiest answer of all, we just got off the road and we got along, we had the longest tour we've ever had. We got along better than we've ever gotten along. We played to bigger numbers than we've ever been playing to. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's now. You know, this ability to like work and do my solo thing and then be able to work on the Matchbox thing and the fans being generous enough to let me go back and forth and kind of be patient with me and being open to whatever it is I have to say in either place.
Yeah.
We have to say, you know, in the case of Matchbox, like, I think there's something, you know, you put so much into something at the very, very beginning. And the hope is that you're putting equity into the future. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of feel like, you know, anything that you and I did that was happening where you were a part of the national conversation for a minute, like that was you buying that currency that you could spend later on.
100%.
No matter where you are. So even if like maybe we're not a part of every conversation now, we're just kind of there and we're solidified. Exactly. And we have an initiated group of people that care about what we say.
Yeah, it's called being an icon, Rob. It's being an icon.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for. I was gonna say demigod, but
okay,
they both work.
Tomato, tomato. Really.
But it is true. I say a lot of times my favorite moments were the beginning because it was that hustle and that fight, and it really bonded you with your brothers, and you know you were all in it together, just trying to prove to everyone like we deserve to be here.
Yeah.
And then I can only imagine years later when you know you've established that fan base and you kind of do whatever you want. That now you tour for different reasons. You know, you're grown up, y'all have kids, you know, you just look at life differently. I can imagine it goes a little smoother this time around.
Yeah, I mean, nobody is as precious about, you know, their ideas as they used to be. If I don't get these out now, then we're all, you know, then the world's gonna end. Or, you know, even worse, my idea is the only idea that counts, you know, that kind of mentality.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like when you guys, what year would you say like was the year that it broke for you guys?
In America, 1998.
Yeah.
98. That makes sense. Because I remember going overseas and seeing you guys, but also seeing a lot of boy bands and singing boy group, like singing groups out there.
Yeah. Oh, there were 500.
And I remember like going back and they hadn't broken the States yet at all. Like it was barely.
There was no such thing as the word boy band in the States. Yeah. No one knew what that was.
Yeah.
I mean, the closest thing had been like Boys to Men or something, right?
That's who we all idolized.
Yeah. Like New Kids, the decade.
Yeah. New Kids was, I guess, the last official, you would call them up because they, you know, sang and dance and they're, you know, kids without instruments. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I like singing group better than I like boy band.
Yeah.
Oh, we all do. But
we're
trying to take the name back.
Yeah, that's what, you know.
And it's fun. And the reason I started this show is I wanted to bring all these fandoms together, and we're definitely expanding who all can be a part of the boy band world. And now we're just like, you know, any dude in a band, you know, we consider you in the boy band family, Boys to Men. Right. We have, you know, everyone is now just a part of this family and we're all having a good time.
But I remember like one year, I think it was the Grammys, or it could have been the MTV Music Awards. They all kind of run together. And you guys, it was one of the places where you guys were doing Friday Night.
Yeah.
And I remember like my wife and I are just on our feet, just fucking hands in the air. But I also looked around and so were everybody else. You know what I mean? Like there were rockers, there were rappers, you know, like I would look out and see, you know, like fucking Dave Grohl, just like fucking.
Yeah.
Like there was a sense of community there that I thought was kind of.
It is great. I remember that was the Billboard Music Awards.
Yeah. It didn't feel that cutthroat. It didn't feel, true. Like, it was just this moment where you just like, you see all these people from all these different genres, but everybody was just kind of like in for the moment.
You know? Yeah, it's true. I'm seeing that right now with Taylor Swift. You know, it's like we're at that moment again where there's an artist.
I'm not familiar.
Well, there's this new artist.
She's up and coming.
She's, you know, she's a country singer.
But she has a promising future.
She has a promising. No, but with Taylor, it just reminded me of those NSYNC days where you just look around and yes, there's a lot of, you know, girls and teenagers and they're having the best time, but there's all walks of life. There's like these dudes and, you know, like parents that are just freaking out over Taylor just as much as their kid, just having the best time.
I'm sure a handful of problematic dudes as well.
Well, of course.
Oh, yeah. There were a few. I was sitting next to one boyfriend who just was sitting down the entire time on his phone.
But you could
clearly tell he
really wanted to get into it, but was just,
he was trying to be cool. He kept looking. He kept peeking.
We traded bracelets. Yeah. Okay.
You traded friendship bracelets.
We have friendship bracelets.
Okay, you got them.
Who do you think is doing it right now? Who's one of your favorite artists?
I mean, doing it right is obviously Taylor Swift. I think.
Yeah, I mean, can't get more right than her right now.
Yeah. there's a new artist. Her name is Just Rosie, and she's just really about to come out. She's a beautiful, beautiful writer. I really like. I'm a big like. I love like Florence and the Machine, and I love like Nathaniel Rateliff. I love My Morning Jacket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess everybody I like is still over 40.
Yeah. Well, you know, we got our likes, you know. Now, you released the album Where the Light Goes, the first Matchbox 20 album in over a decade, back in May. What's it like making music and performing with the guys 20 years later?
I mean, it's been easier.
Yeah.
Like, we kind of thought at some point that we were done making records. Mm. Like, I was making solo records. Kyle's been working solo stuff. Paul has been doing film scoring and television scoring.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were all kind of doing these own things and we kind of thought, well, maybe every few years we'll get together, we'll tour and maybe put out a song and that'll just kind of be what we do. And then, so we were going to go out in 2020 and then, you know, blah, 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 in 2020 and 2021. And then
I don't remember that year. What happened?
Yeah. It's a blur. And,
2022, everybody was kind of going out, but I wasn't ready yet. My wife was still not well. And Pookie, our bass player, was not feeling well. He had had some immune problems. And so that was the year that we felt bad because we knew that other people were out and it was kind of just us. And so that's when we decided, well, we were going to work all summer anyway. So why don't we get together and make a record? And it kind of was born out of that. But it was super easy. Like we didn't really have a lot of pressure on it. We started off with, let's just put some songs together. I took some songs that I was going to work on I had a solo record kind of all planned out with Atlantic. It was going to come out right after the tour. And so I kind of put a hold on that and took some of those songs and we all just kind of started throwing in songs. And it turns out, we had a record easy. We just had to make it. So it was kind of, you know, it was just a different thing. Like it wasn't that weird. We're all going to, you know, move in like a boot camp and live in a studio for 6 months and, you know, bleed this record out and, you know, and hurt for it. It was kind of like, we're all going to get together every couple of weeks. And, you know, sometimes it'll be the two of us and sometimes the two of us and sometimes the whole group. And, you know, and then we're going to do stuff in our own studios at home and just kind of build it up. And it was like, oh shit, it's done. Look at that.
Yeah. Oh, that's so nice. Of your entire discography, I think it might be 3 a.m. because you talked about this earlier, but what are you most proud of writing?
Man, that's a hard thing. I think 3 a.m. we give a lot of credit to because it was the first song that I thought was a good song, that it wasn't just like, I wasn't writing from the outside in, I was writing from the inside out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a song that like Paul heard, and that's what made him answer this ad in the paper to come be our drummer at the time.
Oh, wait, that's how. Okay, so yeah, how did I don't think I asked. How did y'all all get together?
Yeah, how did you?
Yeah, I mean, me, you know, Pookie was with us from the very beginning. He had just graduated from University of Miami, and was living in Orlando, going to Full Sail in Orlando.
Go Full Sail.
Yeah, and had joined. He knew the two old guitar players. Paul answered an ad in Jam magazine.
Love it.
And did he know that he'd have a jammy.
I think there's gonna be like a Netflix series of like a period piece of 1995 at Jam magazine.
It's like a Rolling Stone, only the stakes aren't quite so high.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's like a Rolling.
Hey, we gotta get that band. We can't do it. Oh well.
Oh no.
So great. You know, funny thing is, so Paul, though, answered that ad. He was our drummer in Matchbox 20 for 12 years. And then we fired our guitar player, Adam. And then Paul became our guitar player. Now he's been our guitar player since like 2003 or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So 20 God. Years now, our guitar player instead.
Wait, why'd y'all have to fire the guitar player?
This wasn't working out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we to go.
Yeah. I mean, we tried everything. The four of us were just we were a certain kind of single minded unit, and he just wasn't sharing any of the kind of stuff that we were, you know, focused
on. Yeah. Do you have any particular like rituals or habits to get into that creative mindset?
I mean, a little weed never hurts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lots of good writing on weed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's always helpful.
I like it. You know, it's funny. If I'm doing it in my studio, like I like to clean everything. Yeah. Like I like everything to kind of be in a nice orderly place before I sit down at the piano and like just start writing, you know, especially if I'm going to smoke a little weed, because then I'll just start getting like obsessed with like everything. Like,
Now are you like OCD clean or just like, I just need things in order before
I think write. It's a little both. Yeah. Like one of the things is that the writing for me is more, it comes at like really inconvenient times. Mm-hmm. You know, it's usually like you lay in bed and you're about to fall asleep and this idea comes in and you know you're not going to remember it. Like everybody always says a couple of misnomers, right? They always say, the songs that come quickly are the best ones. And that's not always true. Sometimes it takes you forever to find that right chorus or that right next verse, you know, the lyric. And also the idea that like, if it's good, you're going to remember it. Like that's, you got to record everything and
it's
voice
so true.
Too. Because a lot of times like you sit down and you write down an idea, like a lyric idea, but then you forget the melody that came with it. Mm-hmm. And it's useless without that. Mm-hmm. So like, sure, we all have just voice note after voice note after voice note after voice note of like,
I mean, insane.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Lance, pretty much every night, Lance like will wake up in the middle of sleeping and just pull out his
because
phone.
Because I say the same thing.
And start
like
typing things out.
This is such a great idea. I'm definitely going to remember it tomorrow. I don't need to go write it in my notes.
You never remember.
But I'm like, nope, I will never remember this. So I will like wake up, put it in my notes.
Have you ever Mitch Hedberg that where like you lay in bed and you're just so tired that you try and convince yourself it's not that good of an idea?
Yeah.
Like I don't need
I have.
Write
I'm
it.
Like, you know what? It's good, but like, am I really going to do something with this? Yeah. Do I really need to remember this?
Like, I know. Okay, and then the next day, you get real. And then the next day, I thought of a really good idea, but I didn't write it down and I can't remember it.
It would have been the next big hit.
I've had times where, like, especially if I have a couple, you know, glasses of wine and then I go to bed and I jump up really quick and I get on the voice note and I kind of forget my surroundings and I'm like, it's better. And my wife just wakes up like the house is on fire.
That is great. Since you're such a great writer, would you ever attempt to write a musical?
Yeah, it's funny. I've been talking about that. So there's two things right now. There's a producer, the guy who directed Jersey Boys, actually.
Oh, yeah.
The guy who wrote Jersey Boys is writing the book for, I guess, it's a jukebox musical of mine and Matchbox songs.
Okay, nice.
But it takes place in like, it's a play within a play. Uh-huh. And it's kind of like this done like a Greek chorus kind of, it's, you know, it's pretty ambitious.
Yeah. I love that. Cause your songs are, I mean, you're a storyteller. You do remind me, and you can tell you grew up with country music because, you know, country just, it's a story, right? And with all your songs, like you really just lay out this beautiful, like visual story that you can just see. So I could definitely see your music being turned into a jukebox musical.
Yeah, thanks, man. I mean, you know, there's a line in Push. It's in the second verse. It's like, it says, don't just stand there. Say nice things to me. Mm-hmm. And like, that's a very country kind of a line.
Yeah,
totally.
You know what I mean? Like, because you can't figure out another way to say it. So you just kind of say it.
Yeah.
And that's the best way to do it, you know, especially if you use a lot of colorful language, you know, and a lot of metaphors and and then all of a sudden you throw in just very plain spoken something. It really hits a lot harder, I think.
Yeah.
And that's country 101.
I love it. Give us a frosted tip on what advice you would give to aspiring musicians today in this crazy music landscape.
I mean, I think, again, my understanding of the business world is probably not the best one to take it from. I think anybody over 50 is not necessarily, because I have great advice on how things used to be and how things used to work.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that I still believe that no matter what you're doing, no matter how you're coming at it, the content, you know, matters. And I think You know, if you're coming in and you need to have a good song. Like my son's band is really, really good. They're a better band than I was at that age. But I always tell them, you just need that one song. And yeah. The funny thing is, if you have the one song, these other songs retroactively will do better because they're followed by that one good song. You know, like these songs right now, you don't have to change anything about them, and they might not be hits. But if you have this one hit, they might become hits because all of a sudden they'll be looked at differently. They'll shine a different light on them or something. I'm not sure how you look at it, but
people will find it.
The song is always key. In music, anyway.
And then you have that dreaded sophomore album.
You're like, oh, right. Man.
And I got to follow up.
Prove everybody wrong. Just take your album you're working on right now, throw it out, write another one.
There you go. And I always say, you know, for new artists, don't worry about trying to win over the world. Just try to win over your fan base. Like, create that little fan base, and it will grow if you're authentic. Yeah. They will find you. They will find you.
Yeah, can you guys imagine, like, when you're starting out and you're doing well already, right? Mm-hmm. But then you look over and you see, like, you know, fucking Nickelback or something, and you're like, you know, I want a little bit of that too. And then all of a sudden you're like, you're not Nickelback, but you're not NSYNC. And then, like, what are you? You know, because you're trying really hard to, like, chase after markets as opposed to, like, do what you do really, really well and bring that initiated group of people in and then foster a relationship and love with them, and it'll grow out from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nickelback. Oh my gosh. That was another Orlando band. I know Chad lived in Orlando.
It's Canadian, right?
I don't know, but I know they lived in Orlando. I don't know why. But why do you think they got so much shit for a while there? Like, because they were like one of the biggest bands. And then, like, it's the joke about Nickelback.
I was glad when they did because people left us alone. Like, we were
like, that's fantastic.
Matchbox was Nickelback before Nickelback. And so as soon as they come out, I'm like, yeah, fuck those guys.
So you started this.
Yeah. I mean, I think you know as well as anybody, man, like, there's a certain level of success that once you achieve it, you're such an easy target.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Yeah.
Yep. As much as you're loved, you're going to be as hated as equally.
Well, yeah. It's going to come with the territory.
It's easy for people to punch up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And so they see that and it's like, they figure, like, there's no real harm to anybody there.
Exactly.
Yeah. With your son's band, The Lucky, right? Is your son's band?
Yeah, The Lucky.
How much influence did you have on this band? Like, how much are you helping him? Is this something that you loved for him to get into? Or were you kind of like, ugh, I kind of hope you don't go into music and be a front man?
You know, I believed him enough to pay for Berkeley, for him to go to Berkeley.
Mm-hmm. That's a good
day. And by the end of his 4 years, he did all the right things with it. Mm-hmm. He practiced all the time. He became such a phenomenal guitar player. He started to really become a gearhead. Like, he just, you know, like, he would go, like, to, you know, get a ticket to John Mayer, and John would go meet him at the gate and bring him back, and he would just, like, geek out over John's rig. You know, what is this pedal? What is this, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm really, really proud of the work that he puts into it. And he works really, really hard still. And so when he came out and he moved out to LA with his band, I think probably the worst parental advice, but the best advice to a young artist was, I told him not to have a backup plan. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, if this is what you're doing, go 1,000% in, get yourself a good waiter gig, get something, you know, that's going to pay your bills, and then spend the rest of the time putting everything into the band. And it's going to take a minute, you know, for that to pay off, but it'll be worth it. Cause I figure the worst case scenario is that I'll have him on my couch for a little while when he's 30.
Yeah. You probably wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, no, listen,
I'll love our kids when they're 30 to come back home.
Yeah. All right, let's get to some fan questions here. Well, E498 already asked, would you ever do a duet of Push with Ryan Gosling? And yes, Ryan, give us a call. I'm sure he's listening right now. All right, how does it feel to have your son follow in your footsteps? That's from Mary Beth. I mean, we kind of touched on that, but
I mean, so, you know, another fun fact about my son, I have a private gig coming up in a couple, but then I have a few more coming up, and then I'm going to start on the new solo stuff, you know, after Matchbox gets back from Australia. When we do that, my son is actually going to be the guitar player in my solo band.
That's great. Awesome. And talk about great experience, you know?
Yeah, because it's amazing. He opened up. We just did the Hollywood Bowl, and his band opened up for us when we did the Hollywood Bowl.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, our guitar player just got tired of being on the road. Yeah. And so I called him up and asked him if he wants to take over. So he's gonna move into that spot. So
how proud of a dad were you to see your son opening up with a Hollywood Bowl?
Yeah, Yeah, wow. It's an amazing feat.
Oh my god! Yeah, for anyone.
By the way, so in 30 years, that was the last box to check off, right? Like we had done everything from the Wiltern to Troubadour to Staples Center, the Forum, you know, the Greek. Back when they had a Universal Amphitheater, like we had played all the good stuff, but we'd never done Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
So technically, he played it before I did.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did.
Yes, he did. Again, like you, we played every venue but that. And I go to the shows there all the time, and I'm like, God, this will be so nice.
Such it's a, cool a venue.
Magical venue. Magical.
Really? I can't believe it took us that long, but there is. There's something that was really beautiful and special about being there.
Yeah, we saw Dolly Parton there a couple of years ago. And Reba McEntire we just saw.
We just saw Janet Jackson.
Janet Jackson. I mean, just there's some and it's great. And because you have to change your show a little bit there because the stage is smaller and you can't bring in your full set. So, you know, you have to put on your own, a different show at the bowl.
But it's like that. That white band shell creates its own atmosphere.
Yeah,
it does.
You know, it becomes the light show is the actual, you know.
Yeah, and the fireworks that you can put in there. Woo! Janet had some crazy fireworks. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, that was
like,
nuts.
Jesus. What's Kim up to says, whose idea was it to put a camel in the Real World music video?
Originally, it was an armadillo.
Uh-huh.
But you can't, an armadillo can't make it through the gutters on a bowling alley.
Okay.
Who knew?
I
mean, that doesn't mean why we needed one or the other. Like, why the armadillo? I don't know, man. It's turtles all the way down. I don't know what to tell you.
I love it.
Naturally, get a camel instead.
Exactly. Well, Rob, it was so great to talk to you and really dive in to your life. You've had such a phenomenal career, and I feel like this next chapter is even going to be bigger. And I'm excited to see what is great for you solo with Matchbox 20. I'm so happy that your son is about to like start taking off. I mean, your life is good. Oh, by the way, I wanted to ask, how'd you meet your wife?
She came to see a show in Montreal at a time where I was more famous than she thought that I was, but less famous than I thought that I was. And her like friend had drug her to a show. She didn't really know anything about me, and I got her number, and then went to Europe and just talked to her every night on the phone, and then just fell in love with her. And we got married. We got engaged on our first date. Well, you know, I told her on our first date I was going to marry her.
Really?
And then like a month later, we got engaged, and then a year after that, we got married, and then that was 5 years ago.
Wow. That's a good love story. Before we let you go, do you have time to watch TV at all?
It's all I do.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Same.
Is there anything that we need to be like, you know, binging?
Yeah. What are you
now?
Watching now?
What reality shows are you watching?
Can we talk about that?
Have you guys caught with the bear?
No,
but everybody talks about that show.
Yeah. Not yet.
The bear is pretty
We need to catch up.
Yeah.
Marty and I are watching Miracle Workers, the Daniel Radcliffe show that, it's like different every season. It's like a different point in history every season.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've heard of that, but no, I haven't seen that one yet either.
The Great.
Okay. Oh, The Great. Yeah.
Oh, wow. You're giving us some good recommendations because I feel like we watch every single show and I've not seen any of the shows you mentioned.
Yeah,
this is good.
Some of the best. I have like a sticky that I just send to my friends of like, this is, you know, on HBO. And it goes all the way back to like fucking Breaking Bad. You're like, okay, here you go. If you, you know. Because I'm surprised by, like, my mom just watched Breaking Bad for the first time.
Yeah. It was a good one. You still haven't seen the full... Yeah, I haven't seen it, have you?
This is how bad I never watched it when you were watched it. And I watched it when you were watching an episode one day and it was the finale.
So you watched the finale first? So
it's the only episode I've seen was the finale. I'm like, oh, man.
You guys go down the Downton Abbey rabbit hole?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
It was so good. I went to the movie theater with my wife, right? When that last movie that came out. And I was like, the whole time I'm like, you know, I'm going to go, but I could watch this at home. It's fucking Downton. I don't need to see it in a theater.
Yeah.
And then like an hour later, I'm sitting in the theater like, this is just so beautiful.
I mean, that show is so good.
It's so great. One of our good friends is the Irish guy on the show. The one that was the valet that married one of the whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Our friend Alan Leach.
Yeah.
He plays the Branson.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's great. He just lives down the street, and they have kids kind of like the same age as ours. So We had a little play group and stuff.
Oh, look at that.
Rob, it was so great to see you, my man. Yeah. I hope you have an incredible day. When you're back in LA, I definitely want to come see you guys. Do y'all have any plans on touring California? I know you're
not. I mean, right now, we just got off the road. It was like 54 dates. It was like the longest we've ever done. And so we're barring a couple, you know, corporate and other, you know, kind of like charity gigs. We're doing Australia in February, and we'll be there for like a month. And then after that, I'm kind of like right back into solo world. So I'll reach out to you when I get back out there on solo world.
I would love that.
Love to.
And we're looking forward to the solo album for sure. So we're waiting. We're waiting. The world is waiting, Rob. All right, man. Well, you have a great day.
Go to time, Lance.
All right. Yeah, exactly. All right, guy. All right. We'll see you later, and we'll catch up with you next time.
Yeah, hopefully.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you.
All right, you too, man.
Have a good one. Bye.
Hey, LA, Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels.
From epic shopping to nonstop pride events, DiscoverLA.com is your gateway to everything LA. From walk-up windows and rooftop bars to year-round alfresco dining, Los Angeles is a culinary thrill ride sure to leave visitors hungry for more. From tacos to sushi, we truly have some of the best restaurants. After you get a bite to eat, get a taste for fame firsthand by attending a star ceremony on Hollywood Boulevard or a glimpse behind the scenes at World Famous Studio Tour. Stop and see a movie at the iconic El Capitan Theater and check out the stairs outside the Dolby Theater where all the stars walk before the Oscars. Take a hike at glamorous Griffith or stop for a boba or a draft cold brew at an outdoor cafe perfect for people watching. There are endless amounts of outdoor activities in LA with our beautiful weather. And of course, Pride is celebrated every day in Los Angeles. Everyone is welcome to experience our sparkling nightlife, indulgent spas, and sensational shopping. Plan your weekend at discoverla.com. It's time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass, signing off.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
What a horrible,
should I say,
nasty guy.
Worst interview. God.
What a legend.
I mean,
what a legend.
You know, what a great, I was going to say it again. Such a nice guy.
I mean, we've, you know, I wouldn't say we're friends, but we've definitely been around each other a lot.
But no, I just loved his vibe. He's just
always
cool
been.
And fun.
And the whole band. The whole bit. Now,
and he's never looked better.
I was going
to
say.
I was about to say that. Y'all, what the hell?
He
looks what? Good.
He has not aged a day.
No. I feel like he's gotten hotter.
He's definitely a good-looking boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, like something, like something's in the Orlando water. Something's in the Orlando water. Because, yeah.
Well, for some people.
Yeah.
Some people got like the well water.
Or nacho cheese comes out of
yeah, the exactly.
But the lovely guy, you know, and the whole band is, who was the Matchbox 20 member that we would always go over to Leah Black's house? Was that Matt? Paul? Or no, it was Brian, maybe.
Oh, you're right.
Oh, which one? I forget.
One?
But
I forget.
One of them I remember, that's who taught me how to meditate for the first time. Oh. Remember, I was like, I just can't meditate. Yeah. My brain just, you
I'm
know. And it's like, no, ADD. I'm the same way. And the way you do it is you go back to the same place in your head. And it's like people like us, it was like
that's
major ADD.
Yeah, so you go back to the
same place. And you build one little thing in this little world every mm-hmm. single time. And you just slowly build it. And then... you know, over time, this world gets bigger and bigger, but you just focus on this one little, you know, and mine is an ice world. Like it's just all snow.
Yeah. When one of my times in therapy, I did the same thing, but it's like, imagine like your ideal, like out forest park that is just your own. Mm-hmm. And you go in and all you do is just keep looking around the mm-hmm. park and notice something different.
Yeah.
And build a beautiful, yeah. like here's going to be a waterfall. There's mm-hmm. going to be a flower.
I have
garden.
Lots of igloos in my town, like a lot, but they're like great igloos.
Oh.
And I have lots of animals that don't really, they're not supposed to live in the Arctic areas.
Wow.
But
that's a complicated brain of yours.
It is.
There.
It's very Zootopia, but in.
I was going to say, it's like your Farmville game, Heyday game, but in your head.
Y'all, Heyday's so fun.
We can't go down this rabbit hole. Okay, we can't. I'm going to end it right here.
All
right.
That is all the show we have for you. Thank you so much for listening. Everyone have a great day, because
yes.
it is a great day to
have
a great day. Be good to each other. Don't drink and drive. Take care of all those little animals
and
out there.
And remember,
stay frosted. Hey, thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram at Frosted Tips with Lance.
And Michael Turchinart.
And at Lance Bass for all your pop culture needs.
And make sure to write us a review and leave us 5 stars, 6 if you can. See you next time.
Hey, LA. Lance Bass here with the latest in the City of Angels. Immerse yourself in our vibrant fashion scene where exclusive streetwear meets high-end boutiques. Stroll through styles defining our bold, wildly creative city, like the unique finds at Melrose Trading Post, a real LA gem. Explore star-studded experiences on Hollywood Boulevard, behind-the-scenes studio tours, and moments of awe under our legendary blue sky. Picture this. The iconic Griffith Observatory, inspiring directors worldwide. Plan your weekend at discoverla.com. It's the time to leave your mark in the City of Angels. Lance Bass, signing off.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch, so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.